This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends. Boy, is that loud.
Hang on just a second here. There we go.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here broadcasting live from Croatian Radio, Radio Dubrovnik, Dubrovnik, Croatia. And a special thanks to Zlatko and Mario, who are Zlatko is keeping all things technical working here on this end, and Mario helping set it up and all the folks in New York City, Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner, who are making things work on that end. And we're at the Praxis Peace Conference. Well, actually, we're not there right now. It's about, 20 miles up the road or so, because we're in the studios at Croatian Radio. But we're visiting. We're spending the week with the Praxis Peace Conference. Fascinating. This morning, Johan Galtung was speaking on transformation of conflict, new models for resolving and dealing with conflict, which was a fascinating thing. And also, Sue Nethercott is with us. She is the Sue N who is usually in our chat room, running our chat room. Good morning, Sue.
Morning, Tom.
Great to have you with us here.
Yeah, it's fascinating to be here.
You're in our chat room every day and have been for years and years. You live in London, mm-hmm. Or near London, in Milton Keynes.
Yep.
And here for the conference. Your sense of the conference?
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. The talk this morning was very good.
What was the high point for you?
He made it all sound so simple, you know.
That's dangerous.
I know, but also that you could do more than the absolute minimum. Like, instead of compromise, you could come up with ideas that would actually have benefits for both parties, which
yes.
are better than what people may have imagined when they were just busy having their conflict.
Yeah, a good way to summarize might be beyond win-win.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
Yeah, that was this morning's workshop. Tomorrow I'll be giving a talk. I'll be doing a workshop, and as well as Georgia Kelly and Mikel Lemanins, the Mondragon Cooperatives of Spain, transforming business. They're going to be talking about that. Hazel Henderson will be here, Beyond Economics, Growing the Green Economy. Rhianne Eisler is going to drop by. Francis Moore LePay and Tom Hayden on Wednesday, and so on and so forth. It's going to continue. We'll be back with you on the air on Thursday, and we'll bring a few folks from the conference along. Louise and I stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning last night, local Croatian time, to watch the Democratic debates on TV. And I'd like to get into that a little bit. A lot going on. We can take your phone calls as well, 866-303-2270. Oddly enough, using the magic of technology from Dubrovnik, Croatia here, we can put people on the air, and you'll be calling into New York, of course, and talking to Lauren and saying hi there, and we can get you on the air. And I'm curious about your take on what happened last night with the Democratic debates. Again, it seemed to me that the two truth tellers, just like we saw with Ron Paul in the Republican debate, the guy who really, you know, what's the old saying, the Bob Dylan, I think it was Bob Dylan, when you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. Not to say that Dennis Kucinich and Mike Gravel ain't got nothing. You know, there's still a marginal chance that one of, I'd say probably higher for Kucinich than for Gravel, but there's still a chance that one of them might end up the nominee of the party. You never know. Or somebody else might come along. We'll see, you know, time will tell. But clearly the leaders, particularly the three main leaders, Joe Biden kind of on the periphery of the leaders, but I obviously would like to be. But Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Edwards hedging their words very carefully. I mean, they're in a situation right now where they have everything to lose and very little to win. If they can get in a good shot, if they can get in a good statement, cool. But basically, their job is not to blow it. And one of the things that John Edwards was trying to do last night is differentiate himself from the other two with regard to the war, and suggesting that by essentially kind of tiptoeing in at the last minute in the Senate to vote on the war funding, that Obama and Hillary were not displaying leadership. And he came out and said that. You know, people of the United States and a president, they want a leader. They want somebody, you know, the legislative branch is elected to legislate, but the president is elected to lead. And there actually is some truth to that, although, because, you know, he's not standing for election every 2 years like the House of Representatives, or even every 4 years like the Senate, presumably forever, or as long as you can hold on to it. He has an absolute eight-year limit. And so there is a dimension of leadership to the presidency that does not exist for our other elected representatives, in part because the presidency, unlike other countries, unlike your nation, Sue, unlike the United Kingdom, where you have as head of state the Queen and as head of government the Prime Minister, you have that division between the two. In the United States, we roll both of those, the administrative job of Prime Minister or of leader of the country and the leadership role, really, of the Queen, of the head of state. We roll that into one. We call it president. And so the point that John Edwards was making is that, and he metaphorically patted Chris Dodd on the head for this and, you know, said, Chris did a great job of speaking out against the war before the vote. But Obama, now I'm paraphrasing here, but Obama and Hillary, they kind of tiptoed up and voted. And Obama then took a shot at Edwards, which had the potential if he had done it right. And frankly, he didn't. He rolled it into too many words. If it had been nice and tight and concise, it could have been one of those, you know, I knew John Kennedy, you, sir, know John Kennedy moments. But instead, he didn't quite pull it off, but he was there and he was saying it, and Obama's comment was, well, you Edwards voted for the war, and I was opposed to it back then. And of course, you know, the rejoinder to that, which Edwards didn't get into because he didn't have time, but the rejoinder to that would have been, well, you know, easy to say, you weren't in the Senate. You didn't have an opportunity to vote against the war to Obama. But it seemed to me that John Edwards comported himself quite well. I thought, frankly, all of them did. I didn't see any big blunders. The two high points for me of the debate were, first of all, when they were talking about health care and the whole health care debate. And you had Edwards and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama talking about health care and talking about their plans for health care. And it's obvious that all three of their plans involve keeping the health insurance companies intact. And the fact of the matter is that I think most Americans who have paid any attention to this at all, and anybody in any other country in the world who has paid any attention to this, knows that the healthcare industry, the health insurance companies in the United States, are leeches on the back of the body politic. They are sucking our blood. They are absolutely bloodsuckers. The problem is, they are incredibly rich bloodsuckers, and they're passing that money out to politicians left and right. And as a consequence of that, even those politicians, or arguably in particular those politicians running for president, people like Obama and Hillary and to some extent John Edwards, are unwilling to take them on. They just can't. They know that to take on the health insurance industry is death. I don't know if you've seen the movie Bullworth. If you haven't, with Warren Beatty, it came out maybe a decade ago. And it's basically about a guy who decides that he's going to run for president. He's a senator. And the health insurance company, the health insurance industry, is basically buying him off. And he decides finally to stand up to them. He goes through a midlife crisis, and he's got this girlfriend, all this stuff. But the bottom line is he decides to stand up to the health insurance company. And so what do? They hire a hitman, as I recall. I mean, they're going to take him out. And that's what the health insurance industry does, metaphorically speaking. I mean, they don't hire literal killers, although you never know. So far, they haven't hired a literal killer. But they hire political killers. They hire ad agencies. They hire people to go after folks. And so there was that moment where Dennis Kucinich, God bless him, Dennis Kucinich played the role that Ron Paul played in the Republican debate, where he told the truth. And I thought it was so interesting that I forget who it was, which one of the candidates. It might have been Obama, but it could have been Hillary or Edwards. We were sort of, I mean, 3 o'clock in the morning with no sleep the night before, a long flight over to Europe, or very little sleep, only semi-coherently taking notes. But somebody said, one of the three major candidates said, well, you know, there's only a couple of ways to deal with the health care crisis. One is to mandate that people buy health insurance. And, of course, a lot of people can't afford it, even if you require it, you mandate it. And the other is to mandate employers to provide health insurance. And, of course, that doesn't cover everybody who's employed. And another is to mandate that the states provide health insurance. And, you know, the fact of the matter is those aren't the only three ways. Those are the only three ways. And there was agreement among Edwards and Hillary, John Edwards and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama that, you know, yeah, those are the three ways, and we're going to figure out a way to one of those three ways. And Dennis Kucinich comes along and says, none of you guys are pointing out the fact that there's a fourth way, which is get rid of the damn health insurance company. I mean, he didn't say that, but in essence, he says single-payer national health care, where there's one health insurance company. It's called the United States government. All the funds go into it, and it distributes the money. It's also known as Medicare for All. He said, I don't know why anybody isn't talking about it. I don't know why either. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Now back to the Tom Hartman program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Thing. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live from Croatian Radio, Radio Dubrovnik. Dubrovnik, Croatia at the Praxis Peace Conference. And what a hoot. And the other point from last night that I thought was particularly interesting was Mike Gravel and Dennis Kucinich really got dissed last night, first of all. Virtually all of the questions went to the three major candidates, and then fourth was Joe Biden, the three major candidates being Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards, not necessarily in that order. And then, you know, they'd throw a few more to Joe Biden, and then every now and then, just to kind of acknowledge their presence, Mike Gravel and Dennis Kucinich got a question. And Gravel was tossed a question that, frankly, I mean, he had had virtually no time to speak. And Wolf Blitzer cut him off after just less than a half a minute. And I thought he was giving a really, really cogent answer. And the question had to do with gas prices. And, you know, what are you going to do to reduce gas prices? Like, that's the required mantra. You know, the thing that you have to say. You must reduce gas prices. And Gravel made the point that he wouldn't do anything to reduce gas prices. This is after several people, oh, yeah, I'd investigate the lobby, and I'd investigate the companies, and I want to find... And it goes to Gravel, and he's like, you know, you want to... These guys want to put on a carbon tax. Carbon tax is going to increase gas prices ultimately, one way or another, whether it's on the tailpipe or whether it's on the tank going in. The bottom line, it's going to cost more to use gasoline. And so, but he said, what everybody's missing is the gas, and I'm paraphrasing here, this isn't the exact quote, but he said, you know, gas in the United States is actually $7 a gallon. Now, I would say gas in the United States is actually $10 a gallon, because there's a $3 a gallon, $2 to $3 a gallon that he's not including, and my $2 to $3 a gallon that I would include is the cost of all the cancers in the United States that are the product of burning gasoline, because gasoline is full of all these other chemicals that have nothing to do with propelling your car. They're very expensive to dispose of, and so they put it in gasoline instead of having to pay for toxic waste. In fact, benzene, for example. Benzene down in California, particularly Los Angeles, they've said you can't put benzene in gasoline. You've got to extract the benzene from the gasoline. Benzene comes along with oil. You've got to extract it from the gasoline, and so you have to have low benzene gas because we don't want everybody in Los Angeles dying from benzene. So what do the gas companies do? They take that benzene out of the gasoline in Los Angeles, and rather than paying to dispose of it, which costs a fortune, they put it in our gasoline in the Pacific Northwest because we've got clean air. So we have 30 to 40 times the benzene levels in our air in the cities of the Pacific Northwest, in like Seattle and Portland and whatnot, than they do in Los Angeles. Even though the smog levels are lower, even the exhaust levels are lower, because the big oil companies don't want to pay to dispose of the benzene, so what do? They stick it in our gas and let us dispose of it by burning it through our gas. Now, if you're using biofuels, if you're using diesel or ethanol, there is no benzene. There are no cancers. It's, you know, the output is carbon dioxide, gas, and water vapor. And so I would say that there's an additional $2 to $3 per gallon in of cost of gasoline in terms of the millions of cancers all over the United States every year. But Mike Gravel pointed out accurately that if you take the cost of our military around the world, the cost of all of our military operations that are solely devoted to protecting oil supplies and shipping lanes for oil supplies, and you divide that by the number of gallons of gas that we use every year in the United States, it comes out to about $4 a gallon. So if we're paying $3 at the pump, you're paying $3 to the oil companies, plus you're paying taxes of $4 per gallon to support the military, plus you're paying an additional $2 to $3 per gallon, both in taxes and in health insurance expenses. So really, gasoline in the United States costs $10 a gallon. So why don't we just be honest about it and say, hey, it's $10 a gallon, and start, you know, not necessarily at the pump. I mean, I really don't agree with the idea that we should suddenly jack up gas prices, because it's going to whack so many working people. First, we have to build the alternative transportation infrastructure, and first we have to increase CAFE standards radically and make sure that there's cars out there that people can buy and can move to that don't use as much gasoline. I mean, obviously you can't just make these changes really sudden, but Gravel, just like Dennis Kucinich did with health insurance, where he said, hey, wait a minute, you guys aren't talking about what's really going on here, which is single-payer health care. See, we have, in the United States, we have a single-payer health care system. It's called Medicare. And we have a socialized medicine system. It's called the Veterans Administration. And they both work very well, thank you very much. And they both work within 3 to 4% of total costs. Whereas our private, for-profit, get Bill Frist rich, give billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars to the politicians for-profit health care system costs anywhere from 20 to 30% overhead. It's crazy. So anyhow, Kucinich points that out. Gravel points out the gas thing. And, you know, he's halfway into his little rant, and it was a pretty good rant. And Blitzer cuts him off. Because obviously all the other Democratic candidates are getting uncomfortable at this point, because nobody really wants to talk about the truth. Nobody wants to be the one who says, you're right, but, you know, we want to continue taking campaign money from these people because, you know, we want to beat the Republicans. And if we're not going to beat the Republic, if we don't take the campaign money from the health insurance industry and pharma, big pharma, and as Bernie Sanders points out, the largest and most toxic of all the industries, if we don't take money from big pharma, if we don't take money from the oil and gas industry, you know, how are we going to be able to run for re-election? Ain't going to happen. Tom Hartman here with you live from Croatian Radio, Radio Dubrovnik, in Dubrovnik, Croatia, 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Radio Dubrovnik in Croatia. Boy, the stories we've been hearing from people, the locals that we've been talking with about 1991, 1992, when the city was being bombed from the air, the aerial bombardment. They spent almost a year without water, without electricity, without sewage, without food going in and out. It was just some amazing, amazing stories. Anyway, we're talking about the presidential debates last night and what happened and how it all happened. Our number, 866-303-2270. And Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Great show so far.
Thank you.
I hope you're having a good time over there in Dubrovnik. I got to watch the show last night, and I got to tell everybody, it's time we had debates on PBS and C-SPAN moderated by the League of Women Voters instead of corporations.
Because they would get into more substantive issues, you think?
Well, I mean, just from the questions they ask the front runners are really hard-hitting and substantive. The questions they ask lower-tier candidates like Gravel and Kucinich are kind of throwaway, or even if they're good questions with good answers, they don't do follow-ups. And so it just, you know, and like you said, they put them on opposite sides, so they're out of most of the shots. And
yeah, although my understanding is that the placement and the picking of who was going to stand where was random, although it sure didn't look that way.
Okay. Well, I'll buy that. Basically, I just feel like even if Kucinich did awesome, which he did, you know, because it's run by a corporation and all the commentators are, you know, basically that when he busts out with, you know, pull out of NAFTA and the WTO and so on, they they don't mention it at all. Cause
yeah, that and the let's have a single health payer system and let's get rid of the corporations. You know, you have to assume that, you know, I haven't gone to theyrule.net in the last week or two to look and see if Time Warner, CNN, whatnot, has interlocking boards with any health insurance companies, but I'd bet you $50 they do. And so you're spot on, Jeff. Good point. Patsy in Firquest Crest, Washington. Hey, Patsy.
Well, I'm in Tacoma, too, but Jeff just said about a whole bunch of stuff that I was going to say to you, but I will mention that I did a count on how many questions and, you know, follow-up questions.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first section, Hillary got 13. And she had more time than anybody. Obama 8 and Edwards 8. But poor Kucinich, he was only 3 and Ravel was only 4. And the reason he even got to answer that question about the health care is he raised his hand and Blitzer took him. I just couldn't believe it. The second half was much better because it was a little bit more even.
Yeah, and it was directed from the audience and from people on the internet, and they were specifying who they wanted to ask the questions of.
And I agree with Jeff totally about those throwaway questions. They asked Ravel, what would you do with President Clinton if you were president? Give me a break here.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
that's such fluff. I mean, let's ask about some serious things. Good point, Patsy. Let's ask about some serious things. How do we return return democracy to the United States? What about public financing of elections? How about doing away with these crazy trade agreements? What are you going to do about these trade agreements? How about going back to a tariff system? Is the world really flat? Are we really that crazy? Are we going to continue believing Friedmanism or not? I mean, and what's wrong with a single-payer health care system? Why were none of the leading advocates, particularly Obama and Hillary, who are closest to a system that heavily uses the for-profit insurance companies, why weren't they asked the question? What's wrong with a single-payer health plan system, other than the fact that it'll put out of business big campaign donors? What's wrong with it? Nancy in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Nancy.
Hi. Yeah, and how about habeas corpus and torture?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, hey, could you stop spying on us? There's a plan.
Yeah,
I just wanted to comment on Edwards and his what he said about Obama and Hillary regarding the bill, the mm-hmm. occupation funding bill that passed. They came in afterwards and voted no. And it would have been fine, and he would have left it alone, but they were very busy patting themselves on the back to having taken a stand and making a statement, quote unquote. And it was interesting, the talking heads were painting Edwards as bashing and attacking, and
oh, really?
As if he was some kind of pit bull.
Yeah, now see, at that point, at 3 o'clock in the morning after the debate, Louise and I we couldn't hold it together any longer, so we went to sleep. So I didn't see all the talking head commentary.
Yeah.
That's interesting that was the take of the talking heads was that Edwards was being tough on these guys.
Exactly.
See, I think, I agree with Jeff Cohen. Jeff Cohen published a piece a couple of days ago, it was last week, over at commondreams.org, and I'm assuming it was from someplace else or went someplace else, in which he asked the question rhetorically and then proceeded to answer the question actually, is the media out to get John Edwards? I'm of the opinion that the media took down Howard Dean, and they did it because on Hardball with Chris Matthews,
absolutely.
Howard Dean called for the breaking up of the big media monopolies, and I remember when he said that, it was when he was on the cover of Time and Newsweek, and he could do no wrong, and he was everybody's fair-haired boy, and they asked him that question. Chris Matthews said, you know, wait a minute, you mean that NBC should be broken up? And Howard Dean said something to the effect of, yeah, I don't think that a defense contractor should be owning the media. You know, the media should be owned by media companies. And Matthews was just incredulous, and he was like, you want to break up the, you realize you're on a network here that's a, and Howard Dean is like, yeah. And I turned to Louise and I said, that's it. Howard Dean is toast. And
right.
We noticed literally the next day, there were no more fluff pieces, no more nice pieces, no more. That was it. That was the end of the positive media for Howard Dean. And I have a feeling that John Edwards has come close enough to that line that corporate America is uncomfortable with him, and he's going to be trashed by, he is being trashed, frankly, by the corporate media.
All right.
And, you know, not a good sign for democracy, and all the more reason why, frankly, we need, number one, voter-owned elections, and number two, we need to be applying, in my opinion, some variation on broadcasting in the public interest, you know, something like the Fairness Doctrine coming back, and
right.
the Sherman Act, applying the Sherman Act to the media. So, Nancy, good point, and thank you very much. Well said. Maurice in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Maurice, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. I'm having a fine time here in Croatia.
Well, I wanted to ask you what you thought about Joe Biden, who's co-opted by the credit card companies in his home state, bringing up the issue of public financing of campaigns, because that is the key to not only democracy, but probably public financing of, health care. And also, there's an article by Al Franken on Huffington Post today about this very issue.
Mm-hmm. Did I miss something? Did Joe Biden come out in favor of public financing of campaigns?
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, Louise is sitting here next to me nodding. That must have been, you know, when I was chowing down some dinner or something. I missed that. Well, good on Joe Biden for that, because that and he certainly would be in a position to know, because, you know, here he is from the credit card state, and he voted in favor of the bankruptcy reform thing that and the big credit card companies were all in favor of. But yeah, I mean, that is the bottom line, the corrupting influence. And thank you, Maurice, the corrupting influence in politics. And it corrupts the Democratic Party as badly as it does the Republican Party. The difference is that the Republican Party embraces it. They love it. And the Democratic Party is horrified by it. The corrupting influence is big corporate money, period. And the only way, in my opinion, the only way to get that out, I mean, arguably there's two ways. One way is to do what the British have done, for example, and that is to say you can't spend over $100,000 cannot be spent on a political campaign, period. Whether it's by the candidate, whether it's by an advocacy group, whether it's by the guy down the street, you can't do it. And that tends to make campaigns very short, like they have in the United Kingdom. You know, £100,000 I think is a limit there. There'd be almost $200,000. The problem is, in the United States, we have this thing called the First Amendment that says you can't limit free speech. And the Supreme Court has ruled in various rulings that that money is speech, and therefore you can't limit political money. So what do you do? Well, in my opinion, what you do is you have public funding of campaigns. And Arizona doing it, Maine is doing it, we're doing it in the city of Portland, Oregon. There's other countries around the world that are working with this. I think it's a really good idea. Della in Manhattan. Hey, Della, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello, Tom. You know, during the debate yesterday, Hillary found herself 4.5 years late in voting against the funding as well. So she tried to paint herself into a position with the other Democrats, saying, well, you know, there's only minute differences between us, but the difference between us and Republicans are gigantic. But
well, there's some truth to that.
Well, not really, because on trade policy, Hillary is much of a globalization follower as Bush is, and you know that Bush left his NAFTA plan for Clinton to pass. He couldn't pass it with Republican Congress, with Democratic Congress. So
yeah, but Joe Biden is there too. Joe Biden is there too, and I believe that Barack Obama is there too. I think the only person who's serious, the only of the three major candidates who's seriously questioning our trade policies is John Edwards.
Yes, John Edwards and Kucinich and Gravel.
Yes, the three of them. Yeah.
Yes, and the three of them. And Gravel had some other interesting points to make. He said when Clinton boasted about having passed having balanced the budget, then Gravel said, yes, but you had to use the Social Security Trust Fund in order to do so.
Right.
And also about the gays in the military. Gravel had an interesting comment to make on that, too. He said, why didn't you do what Truman did and integrate the gays into the military the way Truman did the blacks, the way,
and why
did you have to do a half step? So
right, and you notice, Della, that was another one of those moments where Wolf steps in and cuts him off in mid-sentence.
Exactly. Yeah. And I believe that Gravel has a very interesting place there, but two of the people who were just a total waste there are Dodd. Chris Dodd is totally a waste. He says nothing. He does nothing. He has no meaning there whatsoever. But Gravel and Kucinich really do have an interesting position to take there.
And I agree. I'm not sure. Chris Dodd, I have a feeling, is going to be shaken out fairly early. But Kucinich and Gravel are the truth tellers, and we need truth tellers in the Democratic Party. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Families. Let me say thank you to the men who grow the bread. And it's the dreams of a 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here broadcasting live from Croatia Radio, Radio Dubrovnik, here in Dubrovnik, in Dubrovnik, Croatia. We're at the Praxis Peace Conference. Sue Nithicott and Louise sitting here with me in the studio, and we're having a fine old time. Jerry drops me a note, says, please explain yourself regarding Chris Dodd. I think he's excellent. Yeah, Chris Dodd has a lot going for him. He has some fairly progressive positions. I just don't see him gathering the traction. He doesn't have the fundraising, and I realize that shouldn't be a criteria. But he, on the one hand, he's not doing the outspoken truth-telling that Dennis Kucinich and Mike Gravel are doing. And on the other hand, he's not you know, playing the game, and I realize that's a lousy phrase, too, that the other three main candidates are doing. And I just have a feeling that he's going to be left behind. And Richardson. Richardson, in my opinion, is running for vice president. Now, it's just my opinion, but I suspect he's going to be the perfect addition to a ticket. He's from the Southwest. He's Hispanic. He's a multilingual. He's got all the things that you need to balance a ticket, but I don't think that Bill Richardson is running for president. But, you know, time will tell. Louisa in San Diego, California, you have some thoughts on Richardson.
Hello?
Hi, Louisa.
Yeah, hi. I hope you're having a good time. I'm sure you are. I'm sure you're regaling them with all your great knowledge over there in Croatia. I wanted to back on Richardson, too. You know, with such incredible credentials, and I've been watching him, he was so ineffectual last night. I mean, he kept... every time he was responding to a question, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but he had to keep telling us about his resume, and that's not something... You know who you are, and if you, he just looked tentative, and he looked not very comfortable in his skin. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say on that.
You know, I don't disagree with you. Part of the problem was the way that the format was run, and the types of questions that were being tossed out, and they weren't. Frankly, I don't think that they were the really serious hardball, as it were, you know, not to co-opt Chris Matthews' word, but they weren't the type of tough questions. This was not the debate that America needs.
No.
We need a substantive debate on real issues. And now to give Wolf Blitzer some credit, this was a hell of a lot better than most of the debates up until this point.
Oh, yeah.
This
much
was dramatic.
Yeah,
and it was dramatically better than the Republican debate.
Yeah.
I mean, the Fox News Republican debate, everything was softballs until finally Ron Paul says, hey, wait a minute, they don't just hate us because they're evil. And then all of a sudden, one of the moderators, one of the Fox News guys, goes, what? You can't have that. That goes against Fox News doctrine. And Rudy Giuliani, you have something to say about that?
Right.
And I mean, it was pathetic.
Yeah.
It was absolutely pathetic. So, you know, I do give a tip of the hat to Wolf Blitzer for taking this to the next step, but I think it needs to go a whole lot farther. I would like to see a Democratic debate moderated by Amy Goodman.
Yeah, that would be
fantastic. A real news person. She's one of the few real news people out there who's doing real news.
Out there anymore. I mean, we
know.
Chris Matthews and Tucker Carlson. Give me a break.
Well, they're not news people. They're talking heads. They're commentators, and they're right up front about it. That's their job, is to be commentators. And Keith Olbermann is kind of a middle ground. He's doing a news show that contains some commentary, although he at least separates the commentary from the news and labels it. But you know, the fact of the matter is that news is gone these days in the United States. So, good point, and thank you for making it. Steve in Warwick, Massachusetts. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
All right, hi Tom. Thanks for having me on. I think you could tell which were the favorites of the corporate news network there, otherwise known as CNN. But I think the real question is, are they going to handle the same way they handled the Democrats last night, tomorrow night with the Republicans?
Well, it's going to be real interesting to watch. And in terms of these are the favorites or the not favorites of the Democratic of the corporate news media, here's a question that, you know, kind of slowly wanders into the realm of conspiracy theory, maybe not. And that could be, to what extent is the corporate media that is promoting some of the candidates, to the extent that they're promoting them, to what extent are they doing that because they think that, A, they're the best candidates and they make great presidents, or B, they're doing that because it'll drive the most eyeballs to corporate media and make the most profit, or C, because they think that they're the people that a Republican would be most likely be able to beat, and they have, you know, some sort of a Republican bias. I mean, it's a whole bunch of interesting things, considerations there. Sylvia in Redford, Michigan. Hey, Sylvia, just to have to wrap this up pretty quick here.
Okay, real quick question. I just wanted to know if you thought that the health care plans that Hillary, Obama, and Edwards could be converted to a true universal plan. What would it take to make it a universal plan through any one of them?
Yeah, well, all three of their programs, Edwards less so than Clinton and Obama, all three of them still allow for the existence of these private health insurance companies.
Right.
And I'm not saying that they should be outlawed or banned. You know, I think that if somebody, you know, like in Canada, if you don't want to participate in the national health care program, or if you, I mean, even though you do, if you want to go beyond that, you can do so. In the United Kingdom, you can do so. But I'm with Dennis Kucinich. It's time for national single-payer health care. I mean, it's just a very, very straightforward thing. But Philip in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hey, Philip.
Hey, good morning, Tom. I hope you have some lovely beer today. I mean,
well, thank you. It's actually good evening here. It's like, I don't know, what time is it? Five minutes to 7 p.m. So,
well, have a good time there.
Thanks.
I was just been thinking a lot about looking back on Bill Clinton's presidency, pardon me for the noise. But the reason I think he had such a rough time in Washington is because he was not a millionaire. He was not a member of the Millionaires Club when he got there. And there was no way he was going to get that kind of, any kind of support from the Washington clique in the...
But see, I think that's part of why he started the Democratic Leadership Council, was his way of saying, I'm not a millionaire, I'm not part of the Millionaires Club, but I'm sure fine with them. You know, I'll be part of them. I'll bring you guys in. We're going to turn the Democratic Party in the direction that the millionaires will like. And it's been there ever since, frankly. And you know, in my mind, I think that that's something that ultimately was destructive to the Democratic Party and continues to be destructive to the Democratic Party. But that's, you know, obviously just in my mind. Time will tell. Time will tell. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman broadcasting live from Dubrovnik, Croatia on Air America Radio.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour, the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Dubrovnik, Croatia, where it's 6 minutes after 7 p.m. We're getting ready to go to sleep. Or maybe go out and have dinner. I don't know. Anyhow, broadcasting live from the Praxis Peace Conference here. And special thanks to the folks at Croatian Radio, Radio Dubrovnik. And we'll be a little more specific with our thanks and all that in just a moment. Ellen Ratner's on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm actually up in New Hampshire just about to leave. The Democrats' debate was last night. And I got to tell you, I think Hillary Clinton came off the best I have ever seen her since I have watched her since 1992.
Really?
Just really came off very, very smoothly. Frank Luntz, who, as you know, is not as associated with the Republicans as the guy used to be, has actually done some interesting polling. He had a focus group last night, and as opposed to all of the news media in New Hampshire with his group of mixed people, Edwards won the focus group.
Edwards won.
They felt that Obama could not summarize things, and what amazing is I talked to a lot of New Hampshire broadcasters, and maybe you've had more luck with Obama than they have, but I got to tell you, no New Hampshire radio stations who are talk stations have had Obama on. People are non-responsive.
Yeah, I didn't see, Louise and I watched it here on CNN International, and by the way, it's really fascinating. On CNN International, they actually present news, a whole hour of hard news. Unlike CNN Local, where you get an hour of Glenn Beck or you get an hour of, Paris Hilton, there was no discussion of Paris Hilton. There was no, right-wing talking heads. It was just news. It was really quite astounding. But in any case, the CNN International played the 2 hours of the debate, and I did not see a moment where Obama distinguished himself. He seemed to kind of hold his own. It seemed to me like there were some really, you know, John Edwards got some really good shots in there. And, of course, Dennis Kucinich and Mike Gravel spoke out and spoke the truth, the unmentionable truths on things like, you know, gas actually costs $7 a gallon when you include all our defense, you know, the cost of defending our shipping lanes and all that kind of thing. And Kucinich talking about, hey, you know, you guys are all saying there's only three ways to do health care in the United States, and they all involve, you know, huge for-profit health insurance companies that make big campaign contributions. What about single-payer health care, you know, like Medicare for All, where you don't need these big insurance companies, you don't need them passing out money to everybody?
Well, exactly. It's also interesting. Luntz, who, you know, I mean, you could say whatever about his polling, he said that Democrats now have a huge point advantage over the Republicans. He said he does not believe at this point in time, now again, this changed very rapidly in politics. Ben Franklin said it was, week was a long time in politics way back then. He does not believe that any Republicans can win Ohio at this point in the game.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Do you think the Frank Luntz is going to become, is just going to slip, switch sides? I mean, you know, if he's just in it for the money and power.
No, but I think he's going to be very, very much in the middle. He also said that immigration is destroying the Republican Party more than Iraq. It'll be very interesting because Democrats came out very much in favor of getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The Republicans are probably going to use this issue and come out looking like wild social conservatives on the debate on Tuesday. And you know what? They're going to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. America has left them behind on that topic, you know, most of America. Yeah, it's interesting to see the evolution of this entire process. But what I'm assuming that you watched the debate or you were there.
I was there.
You were there. Were you physically there in the audience?
I've done that twice, and now I go back and watch it and then go to the spin room afterwards because I want to see what the rest of America is doing, because frankly it is completely different when you watch it on television than when you're in the room.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because Louise and I, we're in Croatia right now, and so the debate last night was on from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m., and we'd been at this conference all day and had flown in, you know, earlier, and I was just a wreck by 1 a.m., and by 3 a.m. I was really a wreck, and so we just went to sleep, and I'm not sure if CNN International was going to broadcast the spin room stuff or not, because they typically just broadcast actual news. But in any case, I missed all the spin room stuff and all the talking heads and the bloviating. What's your take on the take of the rest of the media? Because so very often they end up creating the perception,
what happened is Obama, Hillary's people feel they're the front runner. They don't need to do stuff. Obama's people did not have a whole lot of people there. Obama did not come out. He and Hillary Clinton were the only two people that did not come out afterwards. Biden got a ton of attention. Edwards, I guess, did not come out. Mrs. Edwards came out. Biden got a ton of attention.
Interesting.
And a lot of people felt he did quite well.
And yet in the polls, Joe Biden is still pretty much nowhere to be seen.
Right. But, you know, this is a long election year.
Yeah. Somebody earlier sent us a note about Chris Dodd. And, you know, why are you dissing Chris Dodd? On the one hand, I think Kucinich and Gravel, particularly given the nature of our media, will not be allowed to be viable candidates. And Mike Gravel is a little curmudgeonly to be a viable candidate, frankly. I don't think that he could beat a Republican. And Dennis Kucinich is, the mainstream media just isn't going to let that happen, much less the Democratic Party. But Chris Dodd is you know, leaning more in their direction of being the radical truth teller, and yet at the same time he has both feet relatively firmly planted in kind of establishment Democratic politics. My sense of it is that he's going to be one of the first victims. He's going to be one of the first to fall out. What's your take?
Well, he will, but he did tell me last night that he's now opening an office in Arlington, Virginia, and that he is getting money pouring in. So
really?
He said he doesn't need much money, and neither does Kucinich, actually.
Because
they're really grassroots. I mean, they don't need the kind of money, and you know, to say their message, and they don't have that kind of heavy-duty staff that they pay a fortune to, like Clinton and Obama.
Yeah. To the best of your knowledge, have any of the internet sites done any good good analysis of what's going on? Is there a sense of if any, and have there been any polls done to indicate whether any of the candidates were hurt or harmed by last night's debate?
The polls, the early polls, did not show any terrific movement one way or the other. And I have a friend who is the general manager at one of the major radio stations here in New Hampshire and said nobody who left the room last night changed their mind. Very interesting. And with that, I'm going to leave you just a couple seconds early because I got to get your plane out.
No, I understand. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Great having you on. Karl Rove has hired a new deputy. Sarah Taylor has left, and now he has hired Jonathan Feltz. Jonathan Feltz? This from the newsobserver.com and Think the Center for American Progress. He's one of the great political geniuses of our times, Feltz said of Rove. It's neat to see how his mind works. Yeah. Right now, he works for Dick Cheney. So it's... And Dick, you know, one of the interesting articles on the plane from Chicago to Frankfurt, you know, they come through the plane with the various newspapers, and I grabbed the Financial Times of London. And one of the front page articles was about how Dick Cheney wants to attack Iran. He wants to have a war with Iran. And George Bush and Condoleezza Rice want to pursue diplomatic efforts, and they don't want to have a war with Iran. I thought that was really startling is the wrong word, but because it was consistent, it was congruent with my observations. I mean, it certainly seems that that's the case. So I don't know. We'll see how all this shakes out. But it's interesting that just the whole idea of that. Now, by the way, George W. Bush, a year ago, if you wanted to get your picture taken with him, well, actually, 2 years ago, 2004, at the Republican National Committee, where I was doing the show, in fact, from the Republican National Committee, nobody invited me to go get my picture taken with George Bush. But had they, it would have cost me $25,000. Last summer, it would have cost $10,000. To get your picture taken with George W. Bush. Now, if you want to get your picture taken with George W. Bush, it's down to $5,000. How long is it going to be before George W. Bush will pay people like you and me to get our pictures taken with him? He's going to need it. He's going to, hey, I need an average person. I want a normal person to get my picture taken with me because I want to try and get my approval ratings back up there. It's yeah. And meanwhile, food prices, 3.7%. increase. They're on track to increase by as much as 7% by the end of the year. This is staggering. Cost of health care is just about the only other thing that's, well, and gasoline going up dramatically. What's this doing? Whacking the middle class. Surprise, surprise. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
I've always been crazy. It's kept me from going insane. Nobody knows if it's something to bless or to blame. Till now, I've always been crazy. It's kept me from going insane.
And speaking of crazy, over at Faux News, John Gibson, the self-described whitest man in America, having a few more problems. You recall some time back he did an editorial suggesting that white people must have more babies because there's, you know, growth of minorities in America. Good heavens, we can't have that. This is Fox News op-ed from last year.
Now it's time for my word. Do your duty. Make more babies. That's the lesson drawn out of two interesting stories over the last couple of days. First, a story yesterday that half of the kids in this country under 5 years old are minorities. By far the greatest number
are goodness.
Hispanic.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what that means? 25 years and the majority population is Hispanic.
Uh-oh.
Well, Hispanics are having more kids, and others, notably the ones Hispanics called gabachos, white people, are having fewer.
Oh, this Bill O'Reilly's got to be freaked.
Put it bluntly, we need more babies. Forget about that zero population growth stuff that my poor generation was misled on. Why is this important? Because civilizations need population to survive.
Especially white ones.
So far, we're doing our part here in America, but Hispanics can't carry the whole load. The rest of you get busy. Make babies. Or put another way, a slogan for our times. Procreation, not recreation. That's my word.
So this kind of racist, I lack a word that I can say on the air, is what passes for commentary over at Fox News, and now Gibson has put his foot in his mouth again.
Now, I am currently under assault on the Internet.
Again.
It arises from a My Word I did yesterday about the TV man, Andrew Speaker.
And here it is.
Now, My Word, the TV man story has me completely mesmerized. I've been doing this for a few years. It seems every time a story pops up about somebody who has suddenly contracted some strange or incurable disease, it's somebody who is either from the third world or was traveling through some godforsaken hellhole and somehow managed to contract Ooga Booga fever.
Now, you get this. Somehow, John Gibson has, it has never occurred to him that white people could actually get diseases. It's all the third world.
Ooga Booga fever seems to have set off a national panic.
What's the problem with that?
Well, that the whitest man in America, who is the black man's best friend, is now being alleged to be a racist for having invented something called Ooga Booga fever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll just leave that to stand for itself and speak for itself. And what it does is it illustrates, frankly, the tragedy, the xenophobia that America is sliding into, the us versus them mentality that America is sliding into, particularly broadcasting here from Dubrovnik, Croatia, where that kind of mentality of your tribe over there, our tribe over here, led to this city being bombed in 1991 and 1992, going a year without electricity, without water, the disaster that was the Balkan War, and you know, do we want that kind of thing in the United States? Do we really want to be forming into armed camps based on race? Somehow I don't think so. Today, by the way, the anniversary in 1989, June 4th, 1989, of the uprising in Tiananmen Square. Again, are we going to be the, once again, and I think we've lost it over the last 6 years. Are we once again going to be the holder of the Goddess of Liberty? As those 15,000 or so people marched into Tiananmen Square on this day in 1987, or 1989 rather, many of them to their death or to their imprisonment for the rest of their lives, they carried a statue, a 36-foot tall papier-mâché statue that they called the Goddess of Liberty. It was a reproduction of the Statue of Liberty in the United States. The symbol of all the possible symbols, the symbol of the idea of tolerance, the idea of a pluralistic society. You know, give me your poor, your huddled masses longing to be free. The idea, the symbol of we can all, as you know, to badly paraphrase Rodney King, who ultimately didn't turn out to be the very best ambassador for the idea, but nonetheless, the idea is good, of, you know, can't we live together here? So, anyhow, today, the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, as we refer to it in the United States very often, and the Tiananmen Square incident, as they might refer to it in communist China. And of course, we're going to continue to buy their goods. But over at Wikipedia, in fact, if you check the Tiananmen Square protest of 89, you can see a picture of the Goddess of Democracy, carved by students from the Central Academy of Fine Arts and erected in the square during the protest. These people were literally reciting Thomas Jefferson and Tom Paine. They were reading from the Declaration of Independence and from Common Sense, Tom Paine's newsletter, and from the Rights of Man. And for that, they were shot, they were arrested, they were imprisoned, and many of them are still in prison, and you know, I think it's time for America to go back to being the nation that is not noted around the world for the fact that we torture people or that we imprison people without habeas corpus, but for going back to being the nation that everybody wants to be like. Not liked, but like. To be the symbol for the world.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on Air America Radio from Radio Dubrovnik in Croatia. Croatia Radio. We're at the Praxis Peace Conference. And a special thanks to Mario Pulitzer and Zlatko Vlahušić. Did I get it right? Thank you, Zlatko. I've been practicing his name for the last half hour here. And Zlatko, in particular, the guy who's making this all work, and Mario helping put it all together. And thanks, you guys are just great. It's Croatia Radio, Radio Dubrovnik. And thanks for the studio. And we will be back here on Thursday. In fact, we will also be doing our show live from Croatia. Tuesday and Wednesday, Peter B. Collins. And Friday, Peter B. Collins will be filling in for me. And you will be in good hands. Peter's a good guy and a good friend and a good progressive. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Louise and Sue are here in the studio with me. Sue Nethercott, who normally runs our chat room and does so from the UK, actually, from Milton Keynes. Is it Milton Keynes or Milton Keynes? How do you say it, Sue?
Well, I say it Milton Keynes.
Milton Keynes. Okay. I probably always mispronounce that one, too. Right?
Well, it's such a new town that people come to it with different pronunciations anyway.
Yeah. It's
gradually developing its own pronunciation. People have been studying it.
Oh, really?
The town.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's 40 years old. It's 40th yeah. anniversary this year.
Yeah. I gave a speech there about 8 years ago. I was doing a book tour for one of my ADD books, so I... been through there once. So, anyhow, Sue is here with us, and she's running the chat room, and you can drop in and say hi and all that sort of thing. And 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Norman, Long Beach, California. Hey, Norman, welcome to the program.
Hello. It's worth the wait. I'll tell you, you are the most intelligent, informative radio person ever, whether you're in Croatia or the United States.
Thank you, Norman.
I sincerely mean
what's on your mind?
That. I had a stepfather who was from Croatia, so it's like
probably it's old home week here.
Yeah, in a way. I have so many comments because I've been on the phone for so long, and I just love healthcare for one thing. I'm a senior on Social Security and Medicare thing, and we have the best not-for-profit healthcare plan here in Southern California that should be nationwide.
What's that?
It's I guess I can say it's SCAN, Senior Care Action Network. It started here in Long Beach 30 years mm-hmm. ago.
Oh, interesting. This is a private, not-for-profit company?
No, it's an HMO, and it is phenomenal. I mean, there's no right. copay. It's just absolutely, you bring it up on your computer, scan
right.
health plan, and you will see.
No, but I mean, the point is it's not run by the government, and it's not
Medicare,
for-profit.
Medicare pays us.
I see.
But
okay,
we don't
so,
have
this, so this is a Medicare provider.
Right.
Okay. But, I get
and they're
it.
Changing yeah. our name, and they're starting to cut us back because they want everybody to go into private health insurance. Like AARP is not a friend of the seniors, believe me.
Now, AARP is essentially an insurance company.
And they are a private insurance company, and that's what the whole purpose is, to get everybody into private insurance, because the drug companies, the private insurers, Bill Frisk and all those guys.
Yeah.
But SCAN is not for profit. We don't even have stockholders. I mean, nobody. And we give in-home assistance. I mean, caregiver.
Well, that's great. But Norman, you wanted to call about the Democratic debate.
Pardon?
You wanted to talk about the Democratic candidates.
Yes. I actually wrote a letter. I couldn't get through on email to Dennis Kucinich because I'm not in Ohio. So I wrote him a letter. I want the Kucinich-Gravel ticket. I don't think that'll happen, but who says you can't win from Ohio? Ohioans are the best in the world now. They're the ones that put somebody in jail for the election frauds. God,
two people actually
on their foreheads. I mean, this man is.
But how many Americans know that two people from Ohio so far have gone to jail for election fraud in the 2004 election?
Well,
for stealing the election for George Bush.
That's the darn problem. When I say something about I really like Kucinich, they say, who's he? I was going for...
They only know
the ones that the media can attack. Like for instance, Edwards, $400. All he has to do is say, look, I'll give my $400 to charity. That's going to
Well, he ultimately paid for it out of his own pocket. And not only that, I mean...
Single-handedly, that $400 is going to correct the poverty that we have in this country?
Well, and not only that, Bill Clinton got $400 haircuts, George W. Bush got $400 haircuts, John Kerry got $400. The bottom line is, if you're in a big city and you're going to have a high-quality professional hairdresser come to your hotel on demand, and because you're in the middle of a campaign and you've only got a small window of time, that person is going to charge you for the travel time there, they're going to charge you for the time doing the haircut, they're going to charge you the travel time home, and when you add it all up, you know, $400 is no big deal.
I know that. I'm a senior on Social Security, and I mean, I spend more on my hair than I probably spend on food, but it's the sound bites on responding to, you know, bring it out in the open. When they attack one of our candidates, let the candidate just say, well, and come back with a polite but a very confront the confronters.
Yeah.
And with something, but every time our wonderful Democrats or any party other than the Republicans want to do the corporate America, get rid of corporate America, they're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
I mean, they're almost stabbing themselves in the back.
Your point is well taken, Norma, and that's the tragedy of our media, and that's the tragedy of a for-profit election system as well. Our election system is a huge for-profit industry. I mean, a massive for-profit industry. And that needs to be fixed as well. And that's public funding of elections. Norma, thanks a lot for the call. Keith in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Keith, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I don't know if at the Praxis you run into any, like, Food Not Bombs activists from Croatia. But I was wondering if you'd had any conversations with local people about the U.S. democracy as compared to what's going on with the elections in Croatia.
There are a number of local activists. I mean, there are a fair number of activists and political organizations in Croatia. I've only been here for one day.
Right.
And, I mean, we arrived yesterday morning, afternoon, whatever, and you know, I was there last night. And so I haven't had an opportunity really to discuss U.S. politics with any local folks. But I'll fill in the answer to that question on Thursday when we do the program again. But you know, it's a good question and good to bring it up. The year that we lived in Europe, it was fascinating to when we lived in Germany to see how Europeans think of Americans. I will share whatever I find in the midst of that. Is this in Federal Way, Washington? I don't have a name here. It's somehow this software.
Yeah, my name is
Scott. There we go, Scott.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Two things that I wanted to bring up about Mike Gravel. Number one, you know, I found it very interesting when he brought up the issue about the war vote and how the statement from Dick Durbin was conflicted because of the two sets of information that was being floated out there. Now, that kind of knocked out Edwards' statement. Number one, he voted for that. And number two, he was on the Intelligence Committee, and if there are two sets of information out there and you still voted yes for it, I mean, you're kind of not the one to be calling anybody out on their vote. And I think
Wolf Blitzer repeatedly, I mean, you know, he went after this two or three or four times where theoretically or arguably going against Hillary, but I would say Wolf against Edwards as well. You were, you know, you did not read the intelligence report, yet you voted for the authorization. And Hillary's response was, you know, we never thought that Bush would do the stupid thing. We thought he'd do the right thing. We were voting to give him the power to do the right thing. And Edwards's response was, hey, I made a mistake. And that's what America needs. America needs a leader who's not afraid to say, I made a mistake, and I'm going to learn from my mistake, and I'm going to do the right thing in the future. And so I think that Edwards, was head and shoulders above all else in that. And I'm willing to forgive him his vote. I mean, because basically that's what he's asked for. He's said, you know, please forgive me my vote, and let's move forward from here. And I'm willing to. Frank in Middletown, New York. Hey, Frank.
Hi there. How are you? As I watched the debates last night, two major things kept coming to me again and again and again. The first was that while they certainly had their differences, all their differences were on how to reach positive ends, how to get a good health care program, how to have a... and on and on. And as opposed to watching a Republican debate where it's how can we keep everybody out, how can we make sure the pharmaceutical companies don't lose any money, and so forth. That was the first thing. The second was, and I think that was a very important thing, frankly, but the second was is that I looked at these people, and I've been a lifelong Democrat, and I've got to tell you, while we all, I'm sure, have our different candidates that we favor, I looked at those people and thought, you know, I really would like to see that one or that one win. But you know what? That one and that one over there wouldn't be bad either. There's
That's
an
right.
incredibly good stable of candidates this year.
Yeah, when you look at the Republicans, all those Republicans standing up there last week, and they will be again this week, it's hard to pick a Republican who doesn't, you know, who terrifies you most? that's the question for the Republicans.
The diversity you saw on that stage without comment. I mean, no one in the Democratic Party is going, oh, we got a black, we got a woman, and we got this, and we got that. It's taken as a matter of fact that this is the Democratic Party. What you
Well, there's also diversity of opinion as well.
Was the range and variance that the Democratic Party has to offer the people of the United States.
Yeah, I thought it was a fine thing. I thought there was also a healthy diversity of opinion and perspective. And again, I think as we had in the last time around, you know, with Dennis Kucinich and at that time Al Sharpton, Dennis Kucinich and Mr. Gravel, Mike Gravel, the former senator from Alaska, speaking the truth, you know, speaking out, and then you've got, you know, the middle candidates, you know, getting close to that in many regards.
I can't see how the middle can look at next week's debate and compare it to this one. And not see that difference.
Yeah, well, let's hope, Frank, that you're absolutely right. That mainstream America, that the average American is going to look at, having actually watched the Democratic debate, and will actually watch the Republican debate, and will say, "Oh my God, how can we do anything other than vote Democratic?"
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Some men live for money, some men live for work, but it's a real man, a richer man, knows what love's worth. It took some time to figure it out, he's a rich man.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Welcome back. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You're on the air. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Quickly, Obama slipped up on a softball thrown by Wolfie.
Okay, what's that?
Yeah, Wolf asked him, shouldn't Bush get credit that U.S. hasn't been attacked in the last 6 years? And Obama answered, oh, yeah, you should get some, you know, you did some good, but the ports are still vulnerable, et cetera. And I can't believe that his advisors, having coached him on this, to say the worst attack in our history happened under Bush's watch after he was warned by a Democratic administration about al-Qaeda. He still hasn't caught Osama. In fact, he says he doesn't even think about him much. And after the first World Trade Center bombing in 93, I guess he doesn't want to say Clinton, but he would have to say Clinton caught Ramzi Youssef after being in office only for a month. And we had no attacks for 8 years because Clinton and a Democrat protected us and gave Bush a warning. Why can't he answer it, or any Democrat like that? I mean, what a softball.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tom. And for some bizarre reason that I have not been able to understand, I wrote an op-ed piece about this almost 3 years ago for Common Dreams. For some bizarre reason that I haven't been able to understand, the Democrats are unwilling to go on the offensive about that and say that, you know, 9/11, and perhaps it's because they're afraid of being portrayed as conspiracy nuts or something, but to say that 9/11 was, you know, happened on Bush's watch.
And he was warned.
Bush owns it.
He was warned.
Yeah, he was warned over 56 specific times that we know of, not to mention the warnings he was getting from the Soviet Union, from the Italians, from the Israelis. I mean, there were all these foreign intelligence services that were warning George W. Bush. And, yes, you're absolutely right. Not only did Obama drop that ball, but then afterwards Blitzer asked a follow-up and basically kind of threw it out to the rest of them, and none of them took that thing and ran with it.
It's amazing. And then on this Edwards thing with the haircut, I think a good one would be, well, you know, FDR was also a rich aristocrat, and he's labor's best friend.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, they could, you know, Bush is wealthy, Democrats are wealthy, but which one is going to help labor? Just look at our history.
Yeah, yeah. Well right? said, Tom. Indeed. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, rich white guys who did very well for this country. Very, very, very progressive. Number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, number 12. Great meeting you when I was there in Santa Fe a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I enjoyed your speech, except for the fact that I listened to you so much. It was just kind of like listening to sort of like a cross-cut of, you know, a week's worth of programming.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, real quick, if you look up, go to PBS.org, I think, is where I saw this film. There's a show that was produced by PBS called The Tank Man, and it specifically deals with the Tiananmen Square massacre and how the Chinese government's concerted effort to erase that incident from the minds of the people of China. And they had a bunch of students that were Chinese exchange students in America, let's say between 18 and 21 years old, and they had absolutely no reference or context to, you know, this incident back in 1989. And they
right, because it was not covered in the Chinese media.
Yeah, and they give them a picture of the picture of that guy standing in front of the column of tanks, and none of them could identify what it was.
Right. Yeah, which is so tragic because it's like in America we remember the shot heard around the world. We remember the massacre in Boston. We remember the Tea Party. You know, the seminal events. And of course, those are the events that led to our current government. And this was an event in China that contradicted their current government. But you're right. It's the power of a government to rewrite history is breathtaking. And frankly, rather dangerous. And therefore, we need to have an active and aggressive fourth estate, a media which is free of frankly, in my opinion, a media that at a certain level is free of the profit motive. I think that the old idea that yes, you can have a broadcast network, yes, you can have a radio station, yes, it can be owned by a for-profit corporation, but it has a first obligation to serve the public good. And if you have to lose money doing it, hey, that's the cost of your license. Pam in San Diego, California. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Just great. I'm having a great time here in Croatia. What's up?
Excellent. I just would love to see Air America get Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich together on the air at the same time, taking listeners' questions and getting a real dialogue.
Now, that would be fascinating. You know, Ron Paul's been on this program probably four or five times over the last 5 years, and it's been probably a year since he has been on because, you know, we used to have him on all the time when he was that obscure Republican from Texas. You know?
Yeah. But him and Dennis Kucinich together talking, being honest with people and getting a dialogue, questions from listeners, I think it would be incredible.
Although there are some very, very significant lines of cleavage. I mean, what I find so interesting is that so many progressives are so willing to embrace Ron Paul because he tells the truth about the war. But, you know, people don't realize that as a libertarian, Ron Paul thinks that there should not be a Social Security program, that there should not be any kind of national health care program, that people should just simply be allowed to fend for themselves, that there should not be a Food and Drug Administration, that the government should play no role in the quality or price of our pharmaceuticals. You know, on and on it goes. I mean, that basically the only purpose of government is to protect an army and to punish a police and prisons. And Dennis Kucinich, being a true liberal, would have, you know, a very different take on that and say, no, government has a protective capacity in addition to a nurturing capacity, a capacity, you know, being the backstop. You know, we've got your back. We're going to take care of you. But it would be interesting to have, I'm not sure, a debate between the two of them, but
just Q&A from the listeners and from you guys, questions that aren't being asked.
Yeah. Well, we have a standing. It's been probably a few weeks since we've talked to Dennis Kucinich's office, and we've contacted Ron Paul's office a couple times about being on the program. So stay tuned, as they say in radio business, and we will get to that. We'll see how that all shakes out. But for right now, you know, we'll see how it comes about. I am, frankly, the tragedy, and this I think is the real tragedy. The tragedy of the media is that. On the right, voices like Ron Paul's are not being heard in their full. So people don't understand that the most conservative parts of the Republican Party really don't want there to be Social Security, even though they also don't want there to be foreign entanglements. And the voices on the left aren't being heard in their entirety, so they don't get it that there are people, you know, who are truly progressive who think we should have a national security, national health insurance program, for example.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio. Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program, broadcasting live coast to coast across the United States, podcasting and streaming all over the planet, live from Dubrovnik, Croatia, here at the Praxis Peace Conference. Thanks to Zlatko and Mario for helping make this thing, the technical end of this thing, happen. It's a marvel. It's a marvel. The wonders of modern technology is just absolutely incredible. Louise and Sue and I sitting here in the studio of Croatia Radio. Thanks to Croatia Radio, Radio Dubrovnik, for loaning us a studio. We will be back here Thursday doing our program live as well. Tomorrow, then Wednesday, and also on Friday, my good friend Peter B. Collins will be filling in for me and speaking with you. Murray Wass blogging over at Huffington Post. The first sign that crimes may have been committed, Murray Wass writes, was when the victims no longer felt nauseous and their hair stopped falling out. Say what? A crime has been committed because somebody's hair is not falling out? Yeah. The crime was that the chemotherapy these people were being given had been diluted with water. And why? Well, you know, chemotherapy is one of those few drugs that doctors can not only prescribe but also sell. They buy it at wholesale, they sell it at retail, and so a physician who's handling chemotherapy can make a lot of money. It's not uncommon for doctors to make well into the six-figure range and some into the seven-figure range and into the millions of dollars dealing out chemotherapy. And, in fact, this one particular doctor, Mr. Courtney, as I recall, was worth, Mr. Courtney, Dr. Robert, a pharmacist, Robert Courtney. This was a pharmacist who was selling diluted chemotherapy to physicians. He was worth $18.7 million. He had two mansions in the suburban, exurban enclave of Kansas City known as Tremont Manor. He was considering the purchase of a condominium in St. Croix. And so Mr. Graves, who was the U.S. attorney in that area, Todd Graves, the U.S. attorney in Kansas City, Missouri, says, hey, you know, this guy, people are dying because of this guy. People with cancer are dying because they're getting diluted chemotherapy agents and their hair isn't falling out, which means that the chemotherapy is not killing off all the fast-growing cells in their body, which includes cancer cells, and so their cancer isn't being stopped, so they're going to die faster. Or they're going to die when, you know, their cancer could have been thrown into remission. And it's increasingly looking like one of the reasons why this ninth fired U.S. attorney was fired. And the title of Murray Wass's piece over at Huffington Post, The Ninth Man Out, A Fired U.S. Attorney Tells His Story. It's increasingly looking like this guy was Todd Graves, U.S. attorney for Kansas City, an appointment of the Bush administration. It's increasingly looking like the reason why he was fired was because instead of using his position to intimidate African Americans or other minorities from voting, he was going after a millionaire who was selling diluted chemotherapy agents.
Well, we can't go after millionaires. Shouldn't be doing that.
I mean, this is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. What happened to the Republicans who understood how toxic this kind of conservative philosophy can be? Teddy Roosevelt, for example, talking about conservatives, the conservatives where he would part company from them when they turn away from the light.
I prefer to work with moderate, with rational conservatives, provided only that they do in good faith strive forward toward the light. But when they halt and turn their backs to the light, sit with the scorners on the seats of reaction, then I must part company with them.
When they turn their backs on the light, then I must part company. This is a Republican. This was the Republican Roosevelt. He was talking about how the reaction, keep in mind, this was back in 1912, 1913. He was talking, and by the way, a president of the United States, term and a half president of the United States, in addition to being a Republican and Teddy Roosevelt. He was talking about how the conservatives of his day, now this is the era of the robber barons, the tale, I mean, this was that progressive interlude from 1901 to 1918 that where the robber barons were starting to lose their power. This is the guy who was famous for being the trust buster. And he was talking about, and I want to put all this in the context of last night's Democratic debate and the Republican debate that's coming up Wednesday night, and I'll be back here talking with you on Thursday and Wednesday night, assuming that we can stay up until 3 o'clock in the morning again. That's going to be a challenge. We will be discussing the Republican debate as well. But this is Teddy Roosevelt saying, these guys, these conservatives in his party, in his Republican Party, were willing to sell themselves out, much like, you know, the French did during the French Revolution of the late 1700s. And, you know, they thought they were going to get one thing, and instead they got Robespierre. They got the terrors. And Roosevelt talked about that back in 1912, 1913. This was a recording actually made by Thomas Edison.
Friends, our task as Americans is to strive for social and industrial justice achieved through the genuine rule of the people.
Our task as Americans... Now, this is a Republican! Our task as Americans is to strive for social and industrial justice... That, you know, by the will of the people? Teddy Roosevelt continues.
In our hearts, we must have this lofty purpose and strive for it in all earnestness and sincerity, for our work will come to nothing. In order to succeed, we need leaders of inspired idealism, leaders to whom are granted great visions, who dream greatly and strive to make their dreams come true, who can kindle the people with the fire from their own burning souls.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, if you consider the progressives that we've had as president of the United States, you had Jefferson, you had Madison. I think that was probably it until Abe Lincoln. And then you had Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt. And set aside the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson. And arguably John Kennedy, we really don't know. He wasn't president long enough to know if he would have been a good progressive or not in retrospect. But the progressives, and so here we have a situation where the Republican Party has apparently, or Gonzalez and the Bush administration, but, you know, the Republicans, have apparently chosen to fire a U.S. attorney because he had the temerity to prosecute a millionaire pharmacist who was diluting chemotherapy agents and put this guy in jail rather than going after people who are African American, who are other kinds of minorities, who are poor, and scare them away from voting, which again brings up the question, what about the U.S. attorneys who weren't fired? We have 8 U.S. attorneys who have been fired. This is the 9th now. Todd Graves. And there are a few others where, you know, the stories are pretty dicey. But what about the U.S. attorneys who did keep their jobs? What about the U.S. attorneys? I mean, we have, what, 36 cases? Either 32 or 36. I don't have my notes here with me in Dubrovnik. But fewer than 40 cases of people who were illegally voting. And that's not including, you know, of course, our friend down in Florida. no, I'm not even going to go there. Ann Coulter, obviously, but no, I'm not even going to go there. But there, you know, like the woman up in Minneapolis who voted after she got out of jail and then was told, you know, you're not supposed to vote when you've been in jail while you're still on parole. And so she went, she called the town clerk and she said, can you take my vote back? I wasn't supposed to vote. Oops. She's been in jail for over a year because of that. Because of that. And this is
a great victory.
This is what Karl Rove, this is what the Republican Party wanted these U.S. attorneys to be doing.
Well, let's prove vote fraud.
32 or 36 cases nationwide. Why? So that nobody would look at the 4 to 5 million Americans who were either not allowed to vote or who thought they voted but voted on placebo ballots instead, called provisional ballots, because the Republicans had caged them. Because of this huge Republican caging operation that is alleged to have been run out of the White House, out of Karl Rove's office, by Tim Griffin, the guy who was then made U.S. attorney from Arkansas, and an opposition research expert, by the way. And, gee, let's just put him in Hillary Clinton's backyard. Doesn't that make perfect sense? The incredible corruption, the mind-boggling, incredible corruption within the Republican Party. I'm telling you, it is time to... I realize the RICO law... cannot be used to prosecute probably 9/10 of the crimes that have been committed over the last 26 years by the Republican Party. We need some variation of it. But a lot of these things are being brought to light. There are complaints. I was reading a conservative blog today. One of the complaints, it looks like John Conyers is preparing an impeachment brief. Yeah.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around. But I stand my ground. And I won't back down.
No, we're not going to back down. Not at all. My friends, we're going to take this country back. This country being the United States, not the one where I am right now. All the guys in Radio Dubrovnik are like, huh? What? Oh, my. Zlatko, Mario, Johnny, thank you so much for all your help. We do appreciate it. Tom Hartman here broadcasting live coast to coast on Air America Radio, 21 minutes past the hour from Dubrovnik, Croatia, where we're at the Praxis Peace Conference. We'll be back here on Thursday again. Just a quick update on some of the news, events of the news. A summary from the Center for American Progress's blog over at thinkprogress.org. In Europe, and this, by the way, was all over the news last night. I know those of you in the United States who watch CNN don't actually get real news. You get mostly infotainment. Here in Europe, if you watch CNN, and of course BBC, which is its competitor, and the two channels are right next to each other on the TV in our hotel room here in Croatia, in Dubrovnik, it was actually news. It was real news. It was quite impressive. And one of the things that they were covering, and they were covering in some depth, and I'm guessing that you're not getting that in the United States, was the protests all over Europe that have already started to protest Bush's presence at the G8 summit, and the questions that they were asking Andrea Merkel and others, the outrage that is being experienced by the British, by the European delegates to the G8. Actually, it's not just the Europeans, the Japanese are coming. The delegates to the G8 over George W. Bush all of a sudden saying, yes, I'm in favor of doing something about climate change. They all figured out instantly that he not only is not in favor of doing something about climate change, but by saying that he thinks something should be done about climate change, what he was doing was trying to short-circuit they're doing something substantial about climate change so that he can come in and say, well, yeah, let's do something, some little... You know, it's sort of like saying, you know, this house needs to be painted. And everybody agrees, yeah, the house needs to be painted. Everybody shows up, you know, the G8, the seven of them come over, and they've all got, you know, a couple of cans of paint and great big paint brushes and ladders and all. They're all ready to paint the house. And then George Bush shows up, and he says, oh, look at that window right there, the lower part of that windowsill. It needs to be touched up. I have a little brush and a pint of paint here. I'll take care of that, and that'll solve the whole problem. You all, the rest of you, you can just take your buckets of paint home and your ladders and everything else. You don't need to do anything. And then we can tell the world that we've painted this house, because we'll have painted that windowsill. I realize it's an imperfect metaphor, but everybody in Europe gets it. And they are seriously upset. Seriously upset. And protests, not just protests among people in the street, protests by the politicians, protests by the people whose lives are going to be affected by the, and which includes us, by the way, you and me as well. It's just not that well covered in the American media. By the continuing emissions spewing into the atmosphere of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. Also in the news, House Oversight and Government Reform Committee staffers appear close to an agreement that would limit the number of emails that panel is going to demand from the RNC as part of their investigation of political presentations given to federal agencies. You'll recall poor Ms. Doan, is it Doan? Doan, Loretta Doan, who hosted one of these things where Karl Rove showed up with his PowerPoint presentation. She was with the General Services Administration, as I recall. Yeah, the GSA Administrator. And yes, we got to help the Democrats. We've got to help the Republicans. Here are the states where we need to help Republicans. Now, this is illegal. This is a violation of the Hatch Act. This is something you go to prison for. And apparently she expected, after she testified truthfully before Congress, that the White House would back her up, that they would refuse to release emails, and they would back her up in the way that they're backing up Bush, Cheney, Gonzalez, you know, all these guys right now that they're trying to do their best to keep out of jail. Well, they're not. She's starting to get a little nervous. On the other hand, the Republicans working with these Democrats are saying, well, let's scale back the number of emails we're going to ask for. Yeah. I'm waiting for them to say, actually, apparently John Conyers already has. I'm waiting for them to show up in the newspaper, the emails that Greg Palast has of the whole caging operation, of the theft of the vote in 2004 in Ohio, where John Kerry actually won the presidential race. So we'll see. They also know war critics in Congress plan a summer of repeated Iraq-related votes designed to force Bush supporters to abandon the White House before the fall. See, I just don't think this is going to have any political consequences. I think the Democrats blew it so badly with that last war funding vote. They blew it so badly. That's the thing that's burned into people's brains. And they can have, you know, 10, 20, 30 votes. You can't have this. You can't have that. We're going to give it to me. It's going to, and then what's going to happen in the fall? General Petraeus is going to come back and he's going to say, well, you know, we have some progress and it's looking pretty good. And Bush is going to say, hey, it's looking pretty good. We can start scaling back our troops. Let's bring them back to the bases. And they'll bring them back to the bases. And once the irritant of our troops in the middle of the Civil War is removed, the violence level will decrease, in my opinion. In particular, the violence against Americans, which is what Americans pay most attention to, tragically, but that's the political reality. And just in time for the 2008 elections, as I've been predicting for, what, a year and a half now, 2 years? Just in time for the 2008 elections, Bush will be able to say, well, see, we solved the war. Everything's fine. Everything's just hunky-dory. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman broadcasting live from Radio Dubrovnik, Croatian radio here in Dubrovnik, Croatia. If that didn't all immediately make sense. By the way, I was saying the Republican debate is Thursday. It's actually going to be Wednesday for you. It'll be Thursday for me, 1 o'clock in the morning. So, I'm sorry, it's Tuesday for you. It's Wednesday for me. Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Louise. Got it. So, tomorrow night. Anyway, can you spell jet lag? 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Tupac in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Tupac.
Hello, Tom. I don't know if it's morning or afternoon for you, but
it's evening.
You on your conference over there.
Thank you. Yeah, it's, let's see, it's 25 minutes to 9 o'clock at night. We're going to go have dinner and go to sleep afterwards.
Well, good for you.
So what's up?
I just wanted to check back in with you. I know we had mentioned in the previous program your interest in the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and how the U.S. and Canada group has been blocking it at the U.N.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there's any glimmer of recognition in your event there in Croatia regarding that issue, and if there was any further we could do to help facilitate that conversation on your program.
Yeah. Well, with regard to on the program, you know, continue sending me information about this, and in particular send it to David, our producer. With regard to the conference, the opening speaker this morning, and in fact it was basically an all-day workshop, was about how empires rise and fall. And fascinating, you know, the discussion of the Roman Empire and the Greek empires and other empires around the world, and how the Anglo-American Empire is now in the process of collapsing, and what that's going to mean and what it's going to look like. Unfortunately, the fellow who's doing it has already left the country. He came in, did his thing, and left, because I thought this would be a great topic to put him on the air.
Right.
But that's it. Go ahead.
I would just jump in there because, you know, here in Phoenix, the theme is a pretty well documented history that along with the rise and fall of the empire, there's also the untold and unknown and uneducated history of the confederacies of peace.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the emphasis that we're trying to bring forward as indigenous peoples worldwide, that we have the framework of an indigenous confederacy of peace, of the original nations of the planet that's still in place.
That's right.
That could be used as a infrastructure to rebuild our humanity as the next phase we fall into it.
Yeah, well said. And in fact, if you go back and you read the real ethnographies, the real stories of first contact before you know the very first time that Europeans had contact with indigenous and Aboriginal people all around the world, and Peter Farb is probably one of the best chroniclers of this in his book Man's Rise to Civilization, you discover that peace was the norm, war was the exception.
If there was war, it was war out of aggression, out of different issues, but it never became an industry.
That's right. That's right. And typically, as Farb pointed out, when there was war, it was a consequence of a lack of resources, and that was a consequence of climate change. You know, long droughts and things, just driving people from one land into another, that sort of thing. So, Tupac, thank you very much for raising the issue and keeping it alive, and we will continue to here on the program. Ed in Pontiac, Michigan. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Just want to thank you for putting out such a thought-provoking and really rational show. It's kind of rare on the radio these days, I think.
You're welcome. I'm having a lot of fun, so I'm okay. Pleased to do it. What's up?
Great. You had a caller last week who called in, an African-American gentleman, talking about himself being armed and ready for a revolution. And I'm a white guy living in a predominantly black town, and I hear a lot of that talk, and I kind of identified with the way you sort of talked them down from a ledge, if that's in fact what happened. And with that said, I just wanted to get your take on Tim Griffiths, the prosecutor from Arkansas, resigning from office, mm-hmm. and what the chances are of any other officials in the Bush administration being prosecuted or indicted for their crimes with vote caging.
Yeah, well, the good news, I guess, is that Tim Griffin has resigned, and that now, you know, somebody else is going to be put in there, and there'll be an opportunity. The law that requires congressional approval, which is really just acknowledging what's in the Constitution, we've been operating under an unconstitutional law for the last year and a half or so, ever since that person in Arlen Specter's office, who is now the federal prosecutor in Salt Lake City, as I recall, slipped that thing into the Patriot Act. But the Constitution requires that federal officers be ratified by the Senate, be approved by the Senate. That the replacement for Tim Griffin, I believe, if that law has, I know it's passed the House and it was fixing to pass to the Senate or vice versa. I don't know if it's been signed by Bush yet or not. But in any case, the bottom line is, in all probability, that person, whoever replaces Griffin, is going to have to go before the Senate for confirmation. And that will provide another opportunity for questions. In fact, this is one of the reasons why they're so reluctant to impeach Gonzalez or to force Gonzalez out, why the administration doesn't want Gonzalez to go out. Because they know that the hearings that will be necessary for to approve of his successor will allow, again, the crimes of Alberto Gonzalez to be identified. Now, so I guess the good news is that Griffin is out of the way. The bad news is that here's Monica Goodling testifying before Congress, before God and the world, using the word caging. I mean, you know, how much more obvious can it get? I mean, literally using the word caging. In fact, here's her testimony.
Failed to disclose that he had some knowledge of allegations that Tim Griffin had been involved in vote caging during his work on the president's 2004 campaign.
Caging. And here, and she's saying this, you know, in front of God and everybody, you know, in front of Congress, and two of the three networks didn't even bother to cover it, and frankly, by and large, it hasn't been covered, period. And, you know, all the more the tragedy, in my opinion. So whether the Republicans will be held to account for the vote caging in the 2000 to 2002, 2004, 2006, and clearly the 2008 election, the fraud that allowed the Republicans to steal somewhere, well, actually, they didn't steal 5 million votes. They pushed 5 million people off the voting rolls. That fraud has not been part of the public discourse in the United States. And you know, all the more the tragedy. It certainly needs to be. Philip in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Philip.
Hey, Tom, are you having fun in Croatia?
I'm having a fine time. What's up?
Okay, the problem with the election and all the things we talk about, nuclear and impeachment, we never had any fun with them.
So you're suggesting what, street theater?
You and I elected Gore, we elected Kerry. They're not in office. What makes you think it'll be different this time?
Well, you know, this is the conversation that Mark Crispin Miller and I had back in September and October of this last year, just before the election in November. And Mark was of the opinion, and he wrote the book, Fooled Again, how the Republicans stole the last election, how they're planning to steal the 2006 election as well. And it's still one of the best books on vote fraud out there, on election fraud out there. And on this program, Mark and I had this conversation, and Mark was like, you know, the Republicans are going to win. They're going to win control of the House. They're going to win control of the Senate because they have already pre-stolen somewhere between 5 and 6 million votes. And I said, well, you know, what if we turn out between 6 and 7 million additional people? And he was like, that's the only way the Democrats are going to take control of the House and Senate, is if as many votes as they have stolen, we have more people show up. And sure enough, we did it. Now, I will be the first to agree with Mark Crispin Miller and Greg Palast and others who do such a good job of chronicling this, that there were at least 30 seats in the House of Representatives and probably several in the Senate where Democrats should have won and did win or would have won if everybody who voted, if their vote was actually counted. But the fact of the matter is that we showed up enough people. I'd liken this to the Revolution of 1800 when Thomas Jefferson was elected. And nobody thought that John Adams was going to leave the White House, and he had the Alien and Sedition Act, and he was throwing Americans in jail for speaking out and for publishing newspapers and things and all that kind of stuff. You know, I liken it very much to that. So the bottom line is, yeah, I'm having a lot of fun watching the hearings that John Conyers is holding, watching the Republicans twist in the wind. I'm very encouraged. Even though there's so much that needs to be done, as we talk with Bernie about every week, you know, he goes through the long litany of things that are happening in the Senate. And yeah, we need 60, 67 votes in order to do anything, to 60 votes to get something through the Senate, 67 votes to override a veto. I mean, there's just so much that needs to be done. And the bottom line is it's going to require a much larger majority next time around. George in Georgia. Hey, George.
Good evening. How are you doing? How's the weather in Croatia?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, sunny. Well, actually, it's dark now, but it was a beautiful, sunny day today.
Yeah, we need some more rain. We had a little bit. Well, I was talking to your screener, and I was listening to the debate last night, and Joe Biden said that one of the reasons he voted for the appropriation bill is political reality. The Democrats don't have the votes.
Was one very, very lousy reason to vote for it.
And the way I feel, I tend to agree with him on that point. But another thing Democrats should be doing is pushing that this is Bush's war, period.
Yeah.
Pounding that in. But one problem we have, you keep bringing it up, the only way you can pound that in is through the media.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
And the media is only going to pick it up when the Democrats start grandstanding, frankly, when they start doing large actions. And another large action would have been to send George Bush the exact same bill again. And we've got until August before he runs out of money. And plus, there's $2 trillion missing in the Defense Department budget. It's not like he doesn't have cash. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Remember, democracy starts with you. Tag, you're it. The president kicked democracy out the door and he shipped it off to a foreign shore. Giving birth instead.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes past the hour, or before the hour, rather. Tromper in the chat room says, checking out the Praxis Peace Conference detail, the hotel looks like it was constructed by a postmodern datist on acid. Yes, let me tell you, having gotten lost in that hotel so many times I can't remember. It's a pretty cool hotel, but anyhow, broadcasting live here from Radio Dubrovnik, Croatian radio. on Air America, coast to coast, but broadcasting from Europe today. I'm here at the Praxis Peace Conference. We'll be back live again on Thursday. Brad in Austin, Texas. Hey, Brad, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for your good work.
You're welcome.
I was just thinking about the debates last night, and when the question came up, and you probably discussed this already, so I apologize if I'm repeating something. But when they asked about if they found bin Laden and you had 20 minutes to hit, and, oh, by the way, there'll be some innocents that'll have to, who will do that? And everybody but Kucinich, you know, raised his hand. And it's just sad to me that the Americans are still so, that the American lives are, you know, more valuable than other human beings' lives.
Yeah.
And what if he'd have followed up and said, oh, by the way, we found out that bin Laden is in a, shacked up in a house in a neighborhood in Houston. So when you knock him out, you'll be knocking out part of the neighborhood there. Is your decision still the same?
Yeah. Well, was it Philadelphia or Pittsburgh where they, back in the 60s or 70s, they firebombed a protest group and killed a bunch of, well, I don't know, my history may be wrong on that, but... in any case, yeah, your point is well taken. It's jingoism. It's cheap rhetoric. It's who's got the biggest toughness this week, and you know, it's Wolf Blitzer trying to inflict that on the Democrats, just like, you know, the Republicans are eagerly my Guantanamo is bigger than your Guantanamo, and they're trying to get the Democrats to do the same thing, and you know, a bunch of them went along with it, and it's a shame. You're right, Brad. You're absolutely right. Greg in Chicago, Illinois. Hey Greg.
Hey. Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to bring attention. You touched on the fact that Cheney is trying to start a war with Iran, and I want to
that he wants to.
Yes, it's trying to, and I want to bring attention to Steve Clemens' blog, The Washington Note. He points out that Cheney is actively trying to do an end run around Bush and the realists, and get Israel to strike at Iran to drag us into this war, and the senior. Administration guy that talked to Clemens says that, yes, this is probably illegal insubordination.
Insubordination against who?
Against Bush.
Well, that's interesting. It makes sense. The vice president, Mr. Cheney, has certainly been operating, you know, to his own tune. He's been dancing to his own tune for some time. And I suspect that there are a lot of stories out of that White House that we will probably never know. And you know, these stories from last week about the guys from Texas who went down there, the former friends of George Bush's and big donors who went down to, I guess you wouldn't say down to Washington, D.C., but went over to Washington, D.C. and met with Bush. And in one case, they got one question out of their mouths in a 29-minute meeting, a 30-minute meeting. And the rest of it was Bush going on a rant, a whine. And the other one was this group that showed up, and he started thumping his chest going, I am the president. And his old friends, they'd say, George, you don't call me George. My name is Mr. President. You know, these are people who have known him all his life. And so maybe Dick Cheney figures, hey, he's gone off the rails. The guy's nuts. I'm going to run the country. I'm going to do it my way, which is, frankly, a little scary to all of us. Alan in La Paz, Indiana. Hey, Alan.
Yes, I was thinking that right-wing think tanks has a lot to do with, like, this right-wing coup, corporate coup that has taken over our country. Wouldn't you think that we on the left need to find our organizations, and how important do you think that is?
I think it's very important. I think it's very important, Alan, and we are. The Center for American Progress is a great force now in the United States. David Brock's organization, Media Matters. I mean, none of these organizations have even 1/50th of the funding of the right-wing think tanks. In America today, if you are articulate, if you can do a good talk show, or if you are in writing, if you're a competent writer, a very good writer, you can, I mean, right out of the gate, you can make $100,000-$150,000 a year, and it goes up, you know, to the sky from there. On the right, as long as you're willing to do it on the right, the sellout factor is huge. On the left, it's more like, hey, we're looking for interns, and who wants to volunteer? And, you know, it's going to be kind of tough, and it's going to be kind of tight, and can you do this with just two people on your staff? You know, that kind of thing. But we're here. We're here. Air America is here. The Center for American Progress is here. Media Matters is here. There's a whole bunch of independents out there. Common Dreams, Buzzflash, Op-Ed News. It goes on and on and on. Tom Paine, Alternet. We're here, and we're staying, and I just think it's a great thing. Charlie in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Tom. I'm always interested in what gets the biggest laughs and what gets the largest applause, given there's some local variation in New Hampshire. But I think Hillary, and I wasn't sure whether it was intentional, when they asked her about diplomacy and negotiating with Iran, she said, well, Condi Rice goes all over the world and drops off, makes a speech, and really does nothing. And then she said, and they send Dick Cheney, who's really not much of an ambassador. And a roar went up in the audience. I mean, I even laughed. It was a pretty funny moment. And then at the very end, when Dodd said what he would do in his first 100 hours, he was the only one who brought up about habeas corpus and civil rights. And that, to me, got the largest applause. So I wonder what other people thought, what they heard.
Yeah, yeah. There were some poignant moments there last night, Charlie, and good point and good for bringing it up. And that goes back to my screed at the beginning of this hour, I believe, or maybe it was last hour, about Tiananmen Square. It's time for America to go back to being the nation that everybody looks at and says, we want to be like them, rather than the nation that everybody looks at and goes, oh, my God, they did it again? They're doing what? To their own people, even? Much less to us? Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today. Peter B. Collins will be in your, you will be in his competent hands the next 2 days. I'll be back on Thursday. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See ya.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.